fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CT&C 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Light notes through the hourglass. These are the songs of our lives. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist and composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Ben Saratan, Carlos Scafoni, Nathan Bowers. I don't know. There's a lot of people. But this week, I'm very excited to have Molto Ohm, a.k.a. Matteo Liberatore. God, why can't I say that? I fucked that up so many times. I practice it, and I say it right every time. Anyway, Matteo Liberatore. I'm a big fan. Molto Ohm is his latest project, and it's so good. It's like this, it's this weird synthesis of all these different approaches and techniques and ideas that he has shown over the years through various, like, solo works, collaborative projects, improv pieces, etc., and it, like, gets all smashed together and put through some weird, like, futuristic digital prism, and then it comes out as Molto Ohm. Something like that. Anyway, he's got a new album called Reality Pills that just came out, and it is freaking fantastic. It is, as I described it in the show notes, it is infectious and off-putting, and that makes me love it, because there's just... there's parts of the Molto Ohm stuff that makes me feel very uncomfortable, and I applaud that. I applaud that a lot. So, huge recommendation of, like, check this out. Check all of Matteo's stuff out. He has just got a huge catalog of incredible sounds. But Reality Pills, it's really special. So, this was, of course, a whole lot of fun to record, and I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is an artist, a composer, a guitarist, so many other things. His latest project is Molto Ohm. It's Matteo Liberatore. Oh, God, I butchered it. Liberatore. I got there in the end. Sorry. How's it going?
I mean, it's a mouthful. It's a mouthful. Honestly, I mean, I did not like my last name for my whole life. And then I moved here. I moved to the US, and people were like, "Oh, I love your last name."
Yeah.
And so then I decided to not. I wasn't gonna change it, but, like, I never liked it when I was over there. It was just too long. It's too verbose. But people really like it here. It's like the Liberator. I'm like, all right, fine. The Liberator.
It sounds very cool. Like, I mean, yeah, you could. that could have been your whole, like, when you were doing improv sets and stuff. Just been like, yeah, the Liberator is here.
The Liberator is here. I never leaned on that inflection on my last name. I always kind of avoided it. I thought it was too many letters. But yeah, we're here with the last name. Honestly, I mean, I became a citizen a few months ago, and they asked me interview. Yeah. Big life change. I mean, not life change, but, you know.
Right.
Definitely something I needed to be a little safer.
That's understandable, yes.
No, at the interview, the guy was like, do you want to change your name? Like, I actually had a possibility. I didn't know that was a thing. Like, I had the possibility of changing my full name for my American passport. So basically, I could have become a whole other person, like a new identity, if wow. I wanted to. I was caught off guard. I was like, no. And then I left and I was like, man, that could have been funny. What if I, you know, what if I put like Molto Om on the passport? That would have been quite a performance art project. You know, to change my full name.
I have become Molto Om.
Literally in America. Like America made me become Molto Om. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow. That would have been amazing. Yeah, but then I thought that was going to be too much of a headache because I have two passports now. I didn't want to have two different names. I was like, I'll just keep my name.
Yeah, so. that makes sense. Well, speaking of Molto Om, you've got a new record, Reality Pills, which is out on February 27th on Soap Library. So it'll be out by the time when this airs next week. I love the new record. I love the project generally. It's when it
Thank
first.
You. Thank you.
The first record last year, really, it surprised me because I was familiar with a lot of your other work and then heard this. It's like, oh wow, this is something really new and different and exciting. I'm curious, like, what was the sort of motivation, inspiration? What prompted you to start this whole new thing?
So I was one of my freelance jobs besides teaching and playing music is recording audio for video shoots. You know, that can be documentaries. It's mostly like documentaries, small shoots, branded content, all kinds of shit. You know, like when you do that job, you kind of go, whoever calls you, you just go do your, you know, it's a freelance job. So like you're just a technician basically that goes there, brings the mics and records. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got to experience a million different realities. You know, I've been like, on the road on documentaries. I've been into like maximum security jails. I've been into mansions. I've been to like this crazy places all over America. And it's not a job I do that much. I will do it like maybe twice a month, three times a month. But now it's been like 10 years. So, you know, in 10 years, if you think like, you know, 60, 70 times a year, that's like a lot of scenarios, a lot of people got recorded. And so I have a whole hard drives of people being recorded. I was on a shoot and I was just recording this guy that was just doing like a commercial. And he just kept saying this line over and over. And he was like, I think it was like a bank commercial. It was like just awful content. And I was just sitting there. I'm like, I can't wait to leave and just get my paycheck. And this guy kept saying this line over and over. And he was like, pretty insecure that he was not coming through well. So he kept asking how's it going? How's it going? Is it good? Is it good? So basically I went home and I thought, man, I need to do something with all this audio. I need to like put it into music or something because I don't know. It's just like this, all these different realities. And obviously, you know, I'm super interested in like cultural stuff, like capitalism, like systems of domination, all these things. So I was like, what if I try to merge all my interests, like sort of, aside of like just the guitar, if I put it into music in some way. So basically I took this guy's voice and I put it over this super fast beat and I chopped his voice and I thought, this is weird and hilarious, but there's something here. I thought like there's something here. So I sent a bunch of friends that were like, this is absurd, but there's something here. Like, so basically I just started pulling out pieces of interviews from for years of archive, and I just took the most absurd ones, like the most sort of like really connected to like the absurdity of like our contemporary society. So I took all these interviews and I just started like playing with beats and synthesizers. You know, I played with synthesizers for years. I had just recorded an album called Lacquer under my own name that is basically like a noise synth record. So I wanted to do something with synths very much because I used to do it like my first band, but I haven't really done much.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. A few years because I was obviously very concentrated on guitar. So so I started playing with synths, with beats and all this like recording of people, all these recordings. And then after a few months, I just started accumulating a decent amount of material. So then I started the process of substituting swapping the audio of those, that audio with like friends reenactments of those interviews, because I couldn't really use those interviews. Like a couple of them, actually, I got permission to use, but like some stuff I couldn't really use. So I just got friends to redo some of those voices, which was kind of interesting because like it really played into like the simulation of, you know, of it all. So it kind of started this whole other process of like reenacting this interview. So it became this whole like sort of meta project about society. And it just felt that I feel like in Moltoama, I felt like I could really throw in there my whole life. I could throw in there like my experience as an improviser, my experience as someone that used to like go to the club, you know, when I was 14 and dancing to like, you know, Eurodance shit, you know.
My love
for noise music, my love for like songs, because, you know, I grew up in Italy and like my parents, all they listened to was Italian songs, like growing up. So like, I really have it in my mind, like in my psyche, like this, like the song form, like the, you know. And I feel like all my music up to that point was a little compartmentalized. So, you know, I had like my guitar improv records, I had my synth stuff, I had my previous band, like, and I had classical guitar before that. So Moltom felt like a great project to just sort of bring it together and just under this umbrella of trying to put in music and in video what I felt about American society, really.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. There is this very kind of maximalist feeling to a lot of it, which I love. And I like one of the things that I think it's maybe in the description or I can't remember, but it talks about like this reference to hyper reality and this idea that like digital life has become more vivid than actual reality. And I'm curious, was there a specific moment where you really kind of felt that shift?
Yeah, that was so. Do you know Cindy Sherman, the artist?
Yes.
So she had it was a retrospective. It was like a bunch of work at the Winnie or the MoMA? I don't remember. It was like years ago. Anyway, there was a bunch of photos of Cindy Sherman where she was basically it's photos of her as if she was an actor in a movie. That was not a movie, it really didn't exist, but it was just like sort of playing on the stereotypical images that you see in the movies. So you will look at these images and you will think, oh, I saw that movie, but you really never, you know, the movie doesn't exist. So it really clicked in me. It made me think how much of what I thought of America was not from really living in America, was just from all the movies and TV shows that I watched since I was a child, you know? Because, you know, Italy, you know, we lost the war, so America has always been in our backyard forever. So it just clicked with me. I said, I didn't come here because of, you know, like the actual reality of the United States. I came here because of the movies and the TV shows. So it just really clicked. I was like, I don't know the United States. I only know how it gets, how it appears in movies and TV shows. Yeah, so that was a kind of a huge wake up moment at the time. It kind of started, this is like years ago, and it kind of started reconsidering. It was like, why am I here? Like, I'm here because I was brought here through these movies, through this like ideology that just gets, seeps into you through all this cultural baggage through TV. And then I started reading like Baudrillard, Hyperreality, and it's a very similar idea, right? It's like the build up of what the reality really is through images. It's so vivid, and it's also, you know, because of advertising, it's made in a way that wants to make reality look a lot better than it actually is. So then the actual reality, your day to day starts diminishing in power, really, you know, because everything you see, like even when you go, like, I remember, like, I had a motorcycle, I would go over a bridge into Manhattan and look at the city and really look at the skyline and think, really, those are just buildings where there are probably a lot of rich people that did a lot of bad things. You know what I mean? Like in the financial district. But you look from the bridge and it seems magical. The skyline feels magical. Right. It feels magical because of the movie, not because of the reality of that skyline being there. So I don't know. When you start thinking about this, then it really kind of start questioning, like, what is it that I'm really experiencing versus what is it that it's in my brain from images that I consumed for years and years. I mean, even like if you remember Clockwork Orange, the main actor, when he says, I think he killed someone or something, and there's blood, and he says, oh, blood looks so much more red in the movies, you know? So like, really, there's this idea that reality, like, the more we consume images, the more it gets like just really sucked off life, you know, because everything is more detailed, everything is more hyper, everything more real in these images that we consume. So our reality gets shittier and shittier.
Right.
I mean, also objectively gets shittier, but also like in our imagination, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that like one of the things that I really love about reality pills is I think there's this sort of like tension in how like so many of these like there's this sound palette or like landscape that is very clear and pristine, but there's this like underneath it all is this sense of unease, and I think
I think it's captured really well. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Before we get into the songs, one real quick last question about it, because I really love that. I haven't seen it. I've just read about it, but I love that the cassettes come with pre-scratched lottery tickets. What made you want to, like, what made you want to include that specific object? Because I think that's great.
You know, when you do this, Soap Library does an object for every record, for every cassette that they do, which is really cute. There is like a little economic, like a little money constraint, right? Like you can't spend too much on it, right? So because you know you don't want people to pay $100 for a cassette with an object or something. Like it's a manufacturing. It's also, you know, so we're like, okay, what can we do? So a lot of people do like handmade stuff, really cool stuff. People have done before with the Soap Library. At first I thought, okay, reality pills. Maybe I thought let's get some pills. With a little, you know, like a pill container, whatever, and then put a fake label on it. You know, with the name of the songs. And then, you know, write something that those pills will do. Obviously, you know, there will be nothing in the pills. That was the first idea. But then it's like, okay, where do we get the cheap pills? And it's like, so then it's like, okay, this is becoming just like a cheap piece of plastic, you know. It's like it's not adding too much to the cassette, it's too literal. So then I was walking the street and I thought, well, what does the reality pill so really means? Like, what is a lottery ticket? Lottery ticket is, again, like
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing, another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Buying into this imaginary reality where things are better, right? Even though we know now from statistics and studies that like people that win a lot of money usually end up being more sad than they were before because they have too much expectation, right? So I thought of these tickets as just sort of this like forgotten and lost dreams of people that were trying to like, they thought they were going to try to get a better life through these tickets, you know, and maybe scratching it again and they didn't win. Maybe that was actually better for them. So it's like, I just playing into this idea of this expectation and hope. And again, lottery is a thing that governments do to raise money for like social programs. So it's so tied into our systems, right? Like it's not like lottery is like free money for us, you know. It's like we're putting money into the thing. It's just playing into this idea of dreams and which ones of these dreams are manufactured, which ones are actually genuine for you, you know, because it's such a commodified world that probably pretty much anything we feel and dream is probably pretty much I wonder if it's anything that is genuine, you know, like any of your hopes and dreams, like are they real? Were they implanted there by an ad that you saw when you were a kid? Like it's so connected. Yeah. So, and they were cheap, you know, we found a bunch on eBay for we found like a nice chunk of them from someone probably in Pennsylvania. They were all from It was like most of them were from 1974 or something. Yeah. So very old. I don't know why someone will keep that. But yeah, we got a lot of them for not too much money. Yeah, it was great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that's, yeah, it makes total sense. And I see how it connects to sort of the themes of the record. I don't have a good segue here. So we're just going to jump into all these songs that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And as always, I will start with asking, what is the first song that you remember?
Well, the first song I remember is the song called Brava by Mina. So Mina is an Italian singer. She's legendary. She's probably sold more albums than any Italian artist ever. Like, we're talking about like more than 100 million, you know, all over the world. Apparently she was huge in Germany, Japan. Yeah, I mean, this is it's a funny song. It's basically just her. It's a song that was made for TV. It's like she used to host this TV show called Studio Uno that was always loosely based on American TV, like Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Broadway theater. Apparently, this the people that created it they were traveling to the U.S. and they saw Broadway shows. They saw stuff that they were like, "Oh, we should bring it back to Italy and we should do it over there." Again, like this connection, America, Italy, America. It's always been super present in the music and in the arts in Italy. But obviously, you know, from a specific Italian kind of feel, right? Because this program was never going to be the same as, you know, a Broadway show was going to be an Italian program, but very influenced by the idea of what they do in America. And so she did this, this piece on TV that was just her just really going insane, like going up and down the notes, and just Brava means good. So basically the piece says like, look, I'm so good at singing. I can go up, I can go down, I can do all these runs. And so the piece is like a showcase of how good she is at singing. I mean, they play this piece, all the time. Like, it's always reruns of like these little clips of her singing this piece. So like the first time when I saw the question, that's literally the first thing that came to mind. I was like, I've been listening to that piece forever. And I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, if you listen to it, like, I'll send you the video on YouTube. There's a video on YouTube. It's just unbelievable how good she's singing it.
I guess just a recording on YouTube. It wasn't like a live thing or anything, but just, yeah, it was so like it was so dramatic and theatrical, but her voice is so commanding, like just stop and listen in awe kind of thing. It was really incredible.
Yeah. Her voice, you know, those rare artists that can combine incredible vocal abilities too with like a vocal tone that is just, you listen, you hear it and you just feel immediately warmer and more comforted or something. Her voice is unbelievable. She went on to become like a total legend. She literally quit public appearances in 1978. Like, after 1978, she did not appear on TV ever again in Italy. She was like, I'm over this stuff. Because she was censored, like a song of her was censored because apparently it was like too racy. But it was like, obviously, you know, Italian bourgeoisie, the 60s, very, very Catholic, you know, very, just very, not closet, just very hypocritical society, you know. So they censored one of her songs, and then she had a relationship with a married actor that kind of caused a lot of scandal. So she was eventually, she was like, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, fuck it, I'm just not gonna appear on this. So then, she became like a complete icon, you know, like she was just not around anymore. She would just keep making records, just records every year, but she was just never on TV. And to this day, it's crazy. Yeah, like there are interviews with like her son about it. Like, it's so anti-capitalist. You know what I mean? Like, just like, I'm not gonna, like, I don't care about selling records. I don't care about appearing on TV. I'm just gonna make my records from my studio with people I like for my whole life. I mean, like, she's still alive in 1970. It's like almost like 40 years. What is it? 40, 50 years.
Yeah. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, what is a song that it either makes you cry or it makes you feel like you could cry?
Yeah. You know, as an Italian, I could have answered many songs that would make me emotional. But Fast Cars by Tracy Chapman, it doesn't make me emotional. It just makes me like totally sob. I just sob. I completely sob. Like it's. I was trying to give you, because I saw them. I was looking at other people that did the Songs of Our Lives, and I did see Fast Cars in there, and I was like, sure. I wonder if that was about. Was it Matt Evans? Probably. I think it was Matt Evans. Actually,
I think. I think he named. A couple of people, it's come up a few times, which, it's like one of the greatest songs ever written. So,
yes.
I think Matt did. And I think there was somebody else, but I'm pretty sure Matt did.
And then I thought about it and I thought, well, that's the one song that I just completely sob uncontrollably sometimes. And especially if, I mean, this is so, so literal. Like if I rent a car and I have to drive somewhere out of New York and like I'm with my girlfriend and we're going to somewhere out of New York, I put that song on and I just cannot stop crying. And even it's crazy. Re-listening to it, before the podcast, like I just, I just sitting on my front of my laptop and crying. Like I don't know. I mean, it's just a timeless song that everybody can find something in there of their own experience. Even if the song is obviously specific about these two people and the dad, the mom's not around. It's very specific, but it's one of those things that through the specificity can really touch on universal feelings. Absolutely. Of a better life and just and obviously I project myself in it as a like someone from another country by myself and it's also an incredible song. I mean like I've taught that song to a bunch of students over the years. And just the guitar part is great. It's like, I love songs that have extremely memorable simple parts, but extremely memorable. And, I think that what makes, songs become, some songs become, memorable because like, iconic because of that. They have like super limited amount of, information, but somehow it becomes, extremely recognizable and memorable. And I think that's an incredible gift for a song to have.
It's one of those songs. It's like you hear the first couple notes and you know exactly what it is. And it just, it gives me goosebumps thinking about this.
Go ahead.
I think it's a really good point you made, like how, like, it is this very specific story, but it touches on such universal themes in this, and the way that it's written in this very, it's just like, everybody has their own version of that story. And it's just, it's such a beautiful song.
And also like, I feel like the beginning, at least for me, like the first part, maybe because I had to teach it to a lot of people over the years, like it's not my favorite part. It's an amazing riff. Like to me, it really gets extremely intense when later on in the song, and it's fun, it's cool because the song reaches the emotional climax a lot later, when she goes that happens like later, so like there is the riff that is already memorable, and then there is the middle part, and then that part, so it really, that shows how much confidence as a songwriter Tracy Chapman had, so they're like, I'm gonna get there later. There was no rush, to get to the emotional part, which is probably something that songs, modern songs, have less of that, obviously.
Right.
But absolutely.
Well, on the other side, what is the song that will put you in a better mood?
So that I had to go with the Rhythm of the Night by Corona. I mean, that's obviously it's a classic, obviously. Sure. But again, going back to the double identity Italian American thing, the fact that this is an Italian song to me is amazing. It's amazing. It really speaks to how international electronic music had become by the late 80s and early 90s, how much Europeans were mingling with the traditions that were coming from, you know, from Detroit, from Chicago, from disco, from, you know, Yellow Magic Orchestra, like all this sort of different strains of electronic music that were put into use to create this Eurodance that I would say it's one of the first super recognizable European sounds, right? Because, you know, they combine hip hop with soul, with house music to just create this, like, this, its own genre, really. Like, I mean, it's, Eurodance is so recognizable when you hear it, even though it has elements of, like, music that already existed. But there is a sort of, like, hedonistic aspect to it. There is a sort of superficiality to it that, it makes it unique sounding. Also, I think there's an attention to the song that is like, maybe it's not present in all the electronic music tracks, you know, because like sometimes electronic music is about more like the riff or the beat. Whereas these guys, these people were like trying to make like full on like pop songs really, but like with electronic, with electronic elements. And yeah, I mean, the, you know, it started really, it started in Germany, actually, Eurodance. But this one song, it's, you know, it's an Italian group. Which is I actually didn't know that for when I was younger, I didn't know that was an Italian song. So that makes it more makes it funnier. And I mean, it is just an extremely well crafted pop song, and makes me think, you know, makes me think of me being, you know, 14 at the, at the club in Italy with my blue metallic shirt dancing on tables, you know, like with my cigarettes, you know, smoking and drinking at 14, because that's what we do. That's what we did, you know. Yeah, so it just like brings up, just like a lot of music that you like, it brings up a lot of like a lot of memories. Of when you were a lot younger.
I bet. Yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. All right, well, everybody's favorite question: what is objectively the best song of all time?
You know, I actually had no, I had no reservation to say prefer the Bottle Reed. I love it. It came to mind immediately. I mean, I probably, if I thought longer, I would have, maybe I would have said Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. That was my other contendant. But there is something about Perfect Day that I mean, I do like slow songs, slow ballads. It's, I kind of respond to them a lot since, you know, I've always responded to them, emotionally. But there is something about the song that, I think the chord progression is incredible, fantastic chord progression. Like the intro, you know, the dominant going to the minor. There's like little things in the chord progression from the intro to the verse to the chorus that make it a very special chord progression, a very special song. The melody is fantastic. The melody is incredible. I mean, the vibe of that song is just. Not that I necessarily love that record either. You know, I like it's. I like the record, but it's not like, oh my god, I love that record. But that one song just sticks out to me so much. Yeah. And it's also amazing that he, you know, in interviews he will say, it's really a song about being happy at the park, and but like you hear it and you just cannot feel happy. You know what I mean? It's like
this underlying darkness to it, right? Yeah, like it's it's like there's, I don't know. To me, I always feel like it's it's about being happy at the park, but there's this. Just out of frame of the song is like this something creeping in, right? Like it's just, which I think it makes the song, like all of that feel very fragile and real and powerful and beautiful.
Yeah.
Song.
It's, I mean, obviously, you know, people are like, oh, it's about his heroin addiction. It's about drugs. And, but it will be like, no, this is literally not, this is, which makes you think if really, how much you maybe you cannot even escape what the the media image that the image that the media has of you, you know.
That's
I guess, which again that plays into the hyper reality of it all, right? Like wanted to make a really a happy song, but
everybody just thought he was, it's like, no, you're the dude on heroin,
exactly. Although I do think the song has under like in under dark undertones, I think. I mean, I again, I don't know if I'm projecting, you know, what is his personal history into the song or not, you know, I don't know.
I think it does too, but I mean, you've got me now questioning my
right.
But yeah, it's a great song. It's such
I think
a great
it's because,
song.
I mean, I think it's, objectively it's sad, like at least the verse, because it's like the chorus is like a B flat major, and then all of a sudden it goes into the verse, it's B flat minor. So it really drops.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The intensity and the darkness is kind of in the chords already. You can read into it with the lyrics, but I think there is an element of something. Yeah. For sure. But yeah, it's an incredible song.
What is a song you used to love, but you've heard it recently, or if you think about it now, it doesn't really do it for you in the same way?
Yeah, so I put Axiom Music by Radiohead. I put it as a more like a... I mean, I do feel like that about this song, but also as a bit of a, like a placeholder about Radiohead in general.
Yeah.
Radiohead is a band that I definitely was listening to it a lot, maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then, reading the question made me think, when is the last time I actually listened to Radiohead? It made me think of it. Yeah. And it's like, why do I not listen to them anymore? And it's been years. I don't really listen to them anymore. So I listened to some of their stuff after a few years, really. It doesn't really do it for me as much. I think the main reason is that a lot of their songs have this sort of structure where they start really quiet and then they blow up at the end. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like emotionally, yes. They start quiet and then they blow up. And that's a music motion that I kind of moved away from over the years, especially after, listening to, Morton Feldman or Eliane Radig, which I don't know if you know, she passed away today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been like low key, thinking about that for a couple of hours. Yeah.
Same.
Because her work, and Morton Feldman and Alvin Lucier, I would say those three composers, they really changed the way I think about music deeply. And one of the reasons why I don't listen to radio as much anymore, because I feel they have this sort of big build ups every song, whereas I'm now more like, just give me something from the beginning and just stay there, kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really a musical reason why I feel like Radiohead, I got a little away from them a little. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I relate to all that, actually. Okay. This is maybe my favorite answer of the whole show here. What is a song that most people hate, but you don't care? You love it anyway.
I mean, is there any other answer than Barbie Girl by ABBA?
I don't think there is. And it's never come up on here.
Really?
But no, it hasn't. And I agree with you. I love it too, because it is so absurd and it is so unapologetic and excessive and ridiculous, but it's so joyful and catchy and yeah.
Yeah, I could spend the whole podcast talking about that song. Not because of the song, it's just the song, it's just all the shit around it.
Yes.
Like, they got sued by Mattel, and then years later, Mattel literally licensed the song for their commercial. They changed the lyrics. But then Barbie was also, was modeled after another doll that was not supposed to be a doll for kids, mm-hmm. So I don't know. There is so much you can throw in there.
Yeah.
The song is, it sounds like a happy song for kids, but like the lyrics are like very sexual. Mm-hmm. And then there's interviews with the band where, the guy's like, I went to an art exhibit. There were all these dolls. There was a world made of dolls. And he thought, oh, that would be funny if we made a song with this line, life in plastic is fantastic. It's fantastic. So it really, for them, was kind of a funny thing to do. But then it was so catchy that it became a whole phenomenon. And so then people were like, what is the song about? What is it talking about? So the band really, they say in the interviews, they were like, we wanted to kind of do a mockery of like a Baywatch, the Pamela Anderson, like the plastic surgery kind of thing that Americans seem to be obsessed with. So they were like, yeah, it was kind of a satire, but they say we really just want to have fun with it, you know? But then, you know, then it started assuming different meanings, and then the Mattel lawsuit. I don't know. It just it became a kind of a cultural theory phenomenon, honestly.
Yeah.
But I think the key is that they really didn't want to do that. Like, they were just trying to make a fun, catchy song that has sexual lyrics, because it's, you know, because that's probably what you do when you write a catchy song, a pop song, and you know, And I think it tells you a lot about also how certain symbols, certain symbols of society, certain behaviors are so marked that no matter what, how you approach them, people talk about it no matter what. So I think that song kind of strikes this this chord, and it really, you can read it as a protest song. I mean, there's this article I read that goes like, this is kind of a protest song. You know, these people made a funny song, but like underneath they're saying, fuck the plastic culture of like American consumerism, really, you know? And then the fact that the song became so huge, it's funny. Yeah. So I don't know. I think there's a song in the song, but also the song itself is super catchy. I mean, and there's also like a post chorus when it goes, I think that's really, really well made. I don't know.
I think this is such a great answer. It also feels kind of like a very distant cousin to some of the Multo Ohm stuff. I'm just going to say, like,
I mean, 100%. I mean, I think pop music, one of the interesting elements of pop music, it really deals with the more, some of pop music deals with the more commercial aspects of our society. So it's fertile territory to talk about certain things, you know, because also as, I mean, not my music, but some of these songs have such a huge appeal. They can really like put thoughts into people's minds, you know, good and bad. So it's a vehicle for, it can be a huge vehicle for protests, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. What is the most romantic song?
Okay. So I had like a list of Italian songs first, but then I thought the translation will make it lose the power, you know? And also most people are probably not going to go on Google Translate and shit. So I thought, what is the most romantic American language song? And I thought, that's, to me, it's Nothing Compares to You by Prince. I do love the Sinead O'Connor version, but I think the arrangement of the Prince demo, I don't know if you ever heard that one, like 1984. His demo sounds so good. I mean... Yeah, I love the keyboard sound. I love the vocals behind it. I love the guitar parts, the saxophone at the end, and his voice. It's just on. I mean, I was mostly familiar with the Sinead O'Connor version when I heard the song. I don't even know when or how long ago, but then I thought this, nobody can sing the song. I mean, only Sinead O'Connor can sing the song. And then I listened to the Prince song maybe a couple of years later. And I was like, now I cannot take this out of my mind now. It's like, it's a Prince song through and through for me now. Like, the arrangement is so much more interesting to me than the Sinead, which is an incredible song, but I do like the arrangement of the Prince one more.
Yeah, I think, I feel like the way his, like, it just, the way it builds, the arrangement is so good. The way it builds from this, it's like this almost quiet devastation to then this just, it's like, it just soars, and it conveys this like enormity of his feelings and how it's just, oh God, it's like just grief and love falling apart. It's, I don't know. I think it's so raw too. And just,
And the lyrics are like, it's funny because it's a song about loss, right? And it's not a song about like a romantic love that is happening in the moment. It's about romantic love that has been lost. There's something about songs about losing love that are almost better in terms of being romantic, you know? Like Call Your Girlfriend by Robin is kind of like that. It's like, it's a sad song, but also extremely joyful. Like, I mean, when that shit comes out at weddings, people like go crazy. And I'm like, why is this song making people crazy at weddings? That's not a good place to listen to that song. You know what I mean?
Gosh, that is, I had that experience semi recently and thought the same thing. I was like, are you all paying attention to the song? I mean, you know, it's like the people who play like Born in the USA on the 4th of July. It's like, this is not a song that loves America, guys.
Yeah. Well, actually, that could be a funny connection to the Aqua song, right? Because do people listen to lyrics really as much as, you know, because I feel like a lot of people, actually, that's also why I picked the song later for the best lyrics. It's like you end up listening to the song, the melody, the inflection more than the actual meaning or specific words. And I, that's how I grew up, obviously, with American music, because I didn't understand shit until I was 22. I didn't understand a single word of English. So for me, songs were just like sounds, you know what I mean? But even now that I'm here, I feel like a lot of people listen to that music that way. Like the lyrics, they're not as important for some people, you know?
So, yeah, I mean, I think there is like actual research on this that it shows that it's something like how you sound and how you like look performing it counts way more than what you actually say. Yeah. And so, I don't know what that says about any of us, but take that for what you
will. No, I mean, that's deep. That's deep.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I mean, I have like a decent amount of like OCD about things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will talk to people and then I'll go home and be like, what did I say? What is it? There's something wrong. Did I do something wrong? And there's a New Yorker cartoon about this. It's hilarious. This guy goes to a party and then on the subway, every stop, he goes like, oh, that was a great party. No, the party was good. Did I say something wrong? And then at the end of the other subway, it's like, that was the worst party of my life. And I kind of go through that sometimes as much as I'm fairly outgoing. And I love going to parties, talking to people, going to shows, but there is always some nagging stuff like, oh, what did you say? What did I do? There's always this paranoia. But then I talked to my therapist, and the therapist was like, most people don't remember what you say. They remember your energy.
Right.
Which made me feel, actually, I think about that every single time I go out now. Like, if you have a good energy as a person, people are not going to remember every single word you say, but they're going to remember the energy and the intention, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of what you're saying. Like, the words, maybe they're not the first thing that people remember. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
That I picked Sympathy is a Knife by Charlie XCX. Mm-hmm. I was over the years, people always play, like, they always ask me, like, oh, what do you think of Charlie XCX? Do you like Charlie XCX? Like, listen to this song by Charlie XCX. And I've always listened to it. And I think, you know, there are great songs here and there, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think this latest album touched on a new territory, at least for me, for her. It's just, I think it's an incredible album. Like, the arrangements and the songwriting, it's just fantastic. It's just fantastic. And that song, the arrangement of the song, the production and the melody.
Oh, yeah.
It's extraordinary. I think that album's, I mean, as much, you know, it's like, yeah, it became, like, obviously a phenomenon, right?
Sure.
But I think there is a reason for it. I mean, it's really an incredible step for, I think, for her music. Again, there is incredible stuff from before. There is that album she did with Sophie. It's like four tracks, Vroom Vroom, which was great.
Yeah.
But the songwriting in this one is, I think it's just, at least for me, it really clicks. It clicks in a way that Charlie XCX hasn't not clicked for me before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've liked a lot of her stuff for a while, but yeah, it felt like it's like one of those things where it just seems I think the songwriting, especially in it all, it just went up a level or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And this is such a good example of that. Like, God, the sound design on it and stuff is just so good. It's so good.
And the arrangement, the way, like, the rhythm of between the vocals and the instruments and the chorus is just terrific. It's just so good.
It's this great balance of being like really smart, but it's still a lot of fun. It's really awesome. Well, we've talked about how people don't pay attention to lyrics. They don't care what you say. They just care how you say it. But What are your favorite lyrics?
Again, I could have put like a bunch of Italian songs that have like extremely deep, profound lyrics, because that's the shit that I used to listen to when I was younger through my parents.
Sure.
But again, I had to translate it, and it wouldn't have translated well, I think. So I picked a song that is like, has an interesting story. So this is Adriano Celentano, which is an Italian actor and singer, songwriter. He wrote this song called, I can't even pronounce it, Prisencolinensinancuso, which is doesn't mean anything. It's just a word with like 50 letters that doesn't mean anything. And he wrote this song to describe the experience of listening to American music for an Italian person. So Italians obviously don't understand lyrics. You know, we make our own sounds about American lyrics. We think they sound in a certain way just based on the pure sound. It's very Cage, very John Cage shit here. So like we don't really, we can't understand the lyrics, most of us, at least when I grew up, like we didn't speak English. So we just made sounds in our heads. For example, Firestarter by The Prodigy, you know, that was not Firestarter, that was Firestarter. Like it was just a sound, you know?
Right.
Or like so there's all these kind of words that don't mean anything. And he made the whole song like that. He said, I'm going to make a song that sounds like English, but it's not English. It's just a bunch of gibberish stuff that to an Italian would sound like English. And so it was conceptually like brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
So if you listen to the song, I don't know what you would like as an American now, like, I don't know if you listen to the song, if you actually think, if you're listening, like Americans say that they don't, you know, that they obviously don't think it's English at all. But for, if you know, if you don't speak English, it sounds so much like English. It's crazy.
I was listening to it. Well, and it's funny too, because I think this song was not even on my radar. I'd never heard of it until didn't they play it at the opening ceremonies in the Olympics?
I heard.
We were watching that, and I was like, what is all this stuff they're playing? Because that's, I don't know, that's like my favorite part of the opening ceremonies is like all this stuff from other countries that I don't know about.
Right.
And then I saw it on your list, and I was like, wow, this is coming to my life twice in 2 weeks.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it, but Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I listened to, I have no clue what it's saying. And I didn't realize that that's what it was trying. And so that's really cool. That's really interesting. I mean, my daughter, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and she in the past year has gotten super into K-pop. So we've been listening to a lot of K-pop.
Nice.
But it feels the same way, you know, because like, I mean, a lot of the stuff switches between English and Korean, but it's mostly Korean, and I have no idea. And so it's like this, you're just kind of making the phonetic sounds.
Yes,
and like,
yes.
And it's, I don't know, I think it's fun and it's weird and cool. And that's, I love the idea though of making like the concept of a song, like that's kind of blowing my mind actually.
No, I mean, this guy was, it was quite a genius. He also sold millions of copies. Yes. Millions of records. Yes. A ton of like regular music out there, but he was just, always pushing. Culture in Italy was always pushing culture, always on TV talking about stuff, interesting things like making weird movies as an actor. Yeah, like 30, he was in 39 movies, besides selling millions of albums. Yeah. And there's when he presents the song live, the first time ever, he says, I wanted to make a song about the impossibility of communicating between people. So he created this whole fake language just to make a song that sounded like English, it's so, I thought it was so deep. Like the idea that Italians are so influenced by American music and American culture, even if they don't understand anything they're saying, you know, we just hear the sound and we think it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
So here I departed from my self-imposed restriction that I had for your podcast. I thought I'm only going to do like songs that have a structure, verse, chorus, memorable melodies. Yeah. Like because otherwise I would have to open too many gates in terms of, right. in terms of music that I was going to talk about. But this one, I put a Morton Feldman three voices. Because I use in my live show as well, like samples from this. So I've heard it so many times because I do mix it in quite often into when I play live on improvise.
Awesome.
And I can just put it on at home and for hours. I mean, Feldman is probably the music, the composer I've listened to the most, maybe, ever. His music is extremely evocative to me. His writing definitely changed the way I think about music. And this piece in particular is just out of this world. I mean, it has everything I love about music. It has the atmosphere, the vibe, it has the pace that I loved. It has the melodies that, you know, it has simple words that mean so much, even though it just read them, that maybe don't mean much, but like within that context, that means so much. And John LaBarbera has a recording that's the one I use.
Yes.
Which is hilarious. Like I just played my release show on Saturday with Wolf Weston and Leo Chang. And we were doing a rehearsal and Leo Chang played a sample of three voices. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like we both are using the same sample, like the same piece. Which that's was a beautiful moment. And it made me think, like, why did I ask Leo to play with me? And I'm like, yeah, because aesthetically, it makes sense. But yeah, I don't know if you're, like, how familiar you are with the piece. It's just,
it's absurd.
Yeah, it's just absurd. Like, and it was way it's recorded also. It's just three voices, but it's the same, you know, it's John LaBarbera doing all of them, right? And singing over a recording.
Yeah, I think it's like an ageless piece of music. Yeah, it just kind of floors me how they create these just huge, like vast, like this emotional territory with such tiny ingredient. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know. It just, it's one of the, I hadn't listened to it in a little while. And then when I got your list, I listened to it and it reminds me, it's just like, it just seems almost impossible to me that it's, you know, it exists.
Yeah. There's an interview there in the book. There's a book, what's it called? Give My Regards to 8th Street, which is this, it's a collection of essays by Feldman. It's just such an extraordinary book. And I think I read it in that book that there's a conversation with Stockhausen where Stockhausen asks Feldman, how can you make this music? And he says, I don't push the notes to do what I want. I just let them be what they are, you know? And and Stockhausen was like, you don't push them a little bit, not even a little bit? And he's like, no, I just let them, you know what I mean? I just let them exist. And that idea, it was so revolutionary to think about it, you know, just let the notes be sounds and don't muscle it. Don't massage them too much. Just let them breathe. So I think that piece does any speeds.
Yeah, it's incredible. What is the last song you completely fell in love with?
I put Show You How by DJ Rashad.
Yeah.
That's a song from 2013. And so it's pretty old. It's not a new song. But I didn't know that album that much, actually. Double Cup, that this Full Work album that he made later in his career, where full work was already, as a genre, was already established. But this album came out and it's a little more polished sounding than the other work of his before. There was another track that I fell in love, but that was earlier on when I learned about full work. This one, I didn't really listen to Double Cup as much before. And I remember one day I just put on the whole album when I was walking the street, pretty recently. And it's just, I was just floored by the whole album. I mean, and this was like the second song on it. What was the song? Let me see. I wrote it down, the sample. What that was? I don't remember the name of the song that it's from. I think it was Cheryl Lynn, actually. Let me see. Cheryl Lynn. Yeah, Cheryl Lynn. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, the artistry, the ability to make something, it's amazing how he was able to make something that maybe was more polished, more accessible for a casual electronic music listener, but still retain so much depth and specificity of sound and articulation. And it's just a master in like production techniques without losing the beauty and the emotion. That's
right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's many people who like have this ability to turn this sort of like technical virtuosity into pure feeling like he does. It is.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautifully put. Yeah.
I mean, I think he's one of the, I don't know, one of the like greatest artists of the last 30 years or whatever, because his stuff, and he's just, and this is such a great song. I hadn't listened to it in a while, so I was really excited to revisit it. And then I've been listening to Double Cup a lot this week, so.
So thank you. For some reason, I never listened to the whole album. I missed it like at when I was listening to more. It's like we're listening like individual tracks more. For some reason that track didn't register in my mind that was there. So when I released the album that came up, I was like, oh yeah, right. This is so good. And I kind of like, I just kept putting it on like the last few months, just like always listen to that song, always coming up.
Man, he was so good. Okay. Last two questions. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but because of you associate with something or someone or an experience, et cetera.
Yeah, so I put Teresa My Love by Antonio Carlos Jobim. That is a song that is from 1970. It's an album called Stoneflower. And by 1970, by 1970, Bossa Nova was not a new, fresh sound anymore. You know, that it was more like that started in 1959 and the 60, that's when it kind of blew up. And so all the Gilberto stuff or like the Stan Getz, that's earlier. So somehow Jobim wrote this album, like he recorded this album in 1970, and it's probably his absolute best album. It's just so exquisite. Like there's no other word to describe it, how exquisite it sounds. And this is the first song of this album. And basically, I remember when I did my English exam. So when I moved here in 2008, so the year before, I had to take an English test in Italy to even be able to apply for music for school here in America, because I went to school here. Wow. So I didn't study English in school either. So I had to like basically learn it with took some private classes, and I was just listening to CDs of people speaking. There was a magazine called Speak Up, just like interviews in English, and I was just driving around for hours just listening to this stuff, reading. So I learned English, like I did a crash course in learning English in like a year and a half, and then I had to take this test in Rome. So I had to drive to Rome to take this test, and I remember I took the test, and then I left that place, and it was my dad's car, and there was a Stoneflower, as there was a CD there. So I put it on, and I was driving along the river in Rome. It was like a beautiful sunny day after this test. I felt like so relieved, and I just put this song on, and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest day of my life. It sounded so right for that moment. I don't know if you're familiar with Rome, just the vibe of Rome with this music on, for some reason it clicked so perfectly. So whenever I listen to the song, I just think of that day after. That was like my first step into moving to America to take that test, you know? So that song that album means so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. This song feels like floating or something. It's crazy. It's so incredible.
And the piano solo is out of this world. And I was actually him playing it. Yeah, it's like that. If I ever hear a piano solo, that's how I want it. I want it to sound.
All right, last question. What is your favorite song?
So for this one, I did indulge into an Italian song. So I went with the E Penso a Te by Lucio Battisti. So Battisti is, along with me, Battisti is probably the Bob Dylan of Italy. Not musically, just as like in terms of like his iconic sort of status. He didn't write his own lyrics. He had someone else writing the lyrics with him. Yeah, I mean, it's beloved by Italians. It's like the sound of the 60s and 70s of Italy is his music, really. His arrangements are super creative. Actually, I would probably say it's more like a Lou Reed adjacent in terms of vibe. I think Bob Dylan is not going to cut it. It's a different, like, because Battisti tried stuff. He tried weird stuff too, you know? Like he had noise songs in there. He had like strange abstract stuff along with like super popular songs. So he was an experimentalist really at heart. And the structure of his songs are amazing. Like he doesn't, there's no rush. Sometimes there's no beats. Sometimes the dynamics of his songs are extreme. Like this song specifically, it starts extremely quiet. You can barely hear, like you have to turn cranked. Your amp, and then it explodes in this choir, this male choir. Da, 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 da. It's a super Italian sounding. It's super loud, like literally blows your speaker. You have to turn it back down. So it was just really experimenting with sound, with texture, with arrangement, and his sense of melody was unparalleled. And this song is kind of like Fast Car. It's really kind of universal feeling. Like I've listened to this song throughout my whole life, and every time feels I associate it to something different. Like the song is pretty simple. It's like this person says, "I'm working, but I'm thinking of you. I'm going out, but I'm thinking of you. I'm going on dates, but I'm thinking of you." So he's thinking about someone else from the past that he lost, or like an old relationship. And then it says, "The city is too big for two people like us to find each other again." So you can analyze anything and think, okay, this is very specific, but also has that sort of universal quality to it. And I've attached all kinds of stuff to this song. I've attached me leaving my parents. I've attached an old girlfriend. I've attached all kinds of stuff, you know. But it's a special song by one of my favorite songwriters. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm just looking now. I'm reading about this song, and just to end things where we began. Apparently, Mina she has done a version of this song.
That one is beautiful. So, yeah, it's very
So it's cool.
I thought about putting that, but yeah, his original is great. But there's a lot of versions of it. Yeah,
awesome. I listened to it a couple times, and it was really beautiful. So I'm one of those things. I had no idea what was being said. So I appreciate
right.
but it. It still comes across, you know? I mean, and that's power of a great song, I guess. Well, hey, we made it through. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for, taking the time and
absolutely. Doing all this. Absolutely, my pleasure. It was fun to, it was super fun to do. Absolutely.
And good luck with the record, Reality Pills. It'll be out when people hear this. Anything, any other shows or anything coming up? I know you just did your album release show.
Yeah, I have I'm going to do a tour, a Midwest tour. Yeah, starting March 27th. I'm going to do 9 shows in 10 days, in the Midwest. Wow. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Yeah.
That'll be fun. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, good luck. And
thank you, Brad.
All right, once again, thank you to Matteo for taking the time. God. So I learned so much from this episode, and I hope you did too. Check out his picks, link in the show notes, link to Reality Pills, all that stuff. There'll probably be shows and stuff coming up soon. Mateo's always up to stuff, and we are all the better for it. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy this show, please leave a rating, a review, subscribe, wherever you listen to podcasts, all that stuff. If you want to go the extra mile, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitalis, for as little as $3 a month. You get episodes early, they're longer, they're ad-free. It's a joy. And I appreciate everybody who signed up. That's it. Till next time, keep on listening, whatever the hell you want.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year,
I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.